Ladies, we need to talk once your brutal breakup stories. It's for a future episode and we want to hear about what happened to you in your horrible breakup. Were you ghosted after 3 years? Dumped on a family trip? Rejected on the way to life-saving surgery? Blocked while giving birth? We are here to laugh with you. Well, maybe cry a little too. Send your brutal breakup stories to our email. You can do it in a voice note or we'll call you back if you send your phone number. ladies@abc.net.au.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Just a note before we start. This episode mentions suicidal ideation, so take care while listening.
I never made a decision to quit my relationship, but it was a realization of it's over the way it was.
I don't organize anything for us because what's the point?
If it feels like no matter how much you knock on that door, change isn't coming, then of course the most protective thing for us to do is to stop knocking.
I don't have the mental space at the moment to deal with things going really ugly.
For some couples, after a few years together, the honeymoon period is well and truly over. Like, you know those little bride and groom figurines that sit on top of a wedding cake? Well, one of them is lying face down in the icing, too checked out to even groan. In real life, it looks like this. You're living under the same roof, eating at the same table, doing Christmas and birthdays together. You might even be smiling in photos. You are not fighting. And that's because you're not actually trying. You've simply stopped reaching for each other. The term quiet quitting went mainstream in 2022. It started with a TikTok video encouraging workers to avoid getting fired, keep getting paid, but to quietly quit, do the bare minimum to avoid burnout at work, and to avoid giving your all to an entity that would never love you back. This surrendering was an acceptance that we may not have the power to change the situation, but we could change our response. And some women are taking that same energy into their relationships. Physically, they're there, going through the motions, but emotionally, they're checked out. Waiting for a day when the kids have left home or they have enough money saved or the courage to say, "See ya, bye." So what does it feel like to be in a relationship with the colour drained out of it? And what is the cost for your partnership, your kids, and your own sense of self? I'm Yumi Steins. Ladies, we need to talk about quietly quitting your relationship.
I don't know anymore the person I loved and spent decades with.
Meet Elodie. She's in her mid-40s and lives with her husband and two young kids. She has a demanding career and she's also been quietly quitting her relationship for years. She's going through the motions, but in her heart, it's over. Rewind 25 years, Elodie and her husband were young expats discovering the Australian bush together and things were very different.
I remember just the two of us being so amazed by the wildlife. As soon as we entered the national park, we switched off the radio, opened the windows and just took it all of this in.
They were going on road trips and making travel blogs.
I would do the writing about the trips that we had. He was doing the photos as well, and he's a great photographer. Mm-hmm. So it was just this kind of shared time together. And we met fairly young, so it was carefree, but it was very serious, I'm going to say, and solid from fairly early on.
What changed in the dynamic between you and your husband after you had kids?
I'm the highest earner in our relationship. I'm the one bringing most of what we need to leave and all of this. I have this pressure of maintaining this. And at the same time, I'm the one doing most of what needs to be done at home. And I'm the one doing everything with the kids when it comes to school, medical appointments, all of this. And it feels like things have changed a lot for me but things haven't changed so much for him in terms of responsibilities. And so that was a bit difficult to deal with.
Elodie's oldest is 9, and while she noticed their relationship shift after she came along, things got really bad when their second kid was born 5 years ago. Even though she felt like her husband wasn't pulling his weight at home, she didn't have the language to tell him how much he was letting her down.
Because of the way I grew up and the way emotions were dealt with in my family, I found it very hard to voice this.
Okay. Can you help us understand some examples maybe of what triggered that feeling of resentment?
Oh, I would be the only one being able to put one of the kids to sleep because they absolutely wanted me. And instead of taking the time to, I don't know, do a lot of laundry or do something like this while I was putting the kids to bed, he would be just reading or watching something. And it felt like this kind of house chore side of things was all on me.
Already feeling unseen and unappreciated, it got worse. 4 years ago, when her oldest was 5 and the youngest was still a baby, her husband's dad died and hubby shut down.
He got so lost into grief that he couldn't handle feelings anymore, or at least feelings that are difficult. That's when it started really crumbling because he would refuse to have any kind of difficult emotions, so dealing with sadness or dealing with kids having a meltdown or yelling. And so he would basically either shut down or become very angry, which was never the case before.
I'm sorry to hear that. That's rough, isn't it? Tell me about how his moods impact you and the kids.
If I'm cooking and the kids are playing, you know, they're playing on the floor next to me and they might be a bit loud. So I'm going to ask them to be a bit quieter because I don't want him to get annoyed and maybe start yelling or something like this. And I find this terrifying because I'm a feminist. I have worked for years on gender rights and domestic violence as well. And I see some of the things in my own relationship that just feel wrong. And the logical part of me is just going, this is not okay, you need to leave. Another part of me keeps just going, yeah, but maybe I can just make things better.
Elodie's tried multiple ways to reconnect with her husband since his dad died. She organised couples counselling, but he wasn't willing to engage and they stopped going after 2 sessions. They haven't had sex in 5 years. But that's not for Elodie's lack of trying.
He completely refused to be intimate at all and even just, you know, hugging, kissing, anything like this. After we had our second child, I tried to just reinitiate this because I missed it and because for me that's part of being in a relationship. He was actually very dismissive. Sometimes he got even humiliating in the way he was just pushing me back. And so I learned not to initiate anymore.
One by one, the systems have shut down in Elodie's relationship. Sexual self, shut down. Heart, shut down. Energy, power it down. Her body is the only thing left in the building.
If it feels like no matter how much you knock on that door, change isn't coming or it's not being seen or understood, then of course the most protective thing for us to do is to stop knocking.
Ladies, this is Dr. Cassandra Shields. We'll call her Dr. Cassie. She's a clinical psychologist who helps people who have quietly quit their relationships. When she's in the therapy room with clients, she uses the term the burnt out pursuer.
Oftentimes when I give that as a label, they get it straight away because it's like, yeah, I am totally burnt out. That is exactly what it is. Then the result is it looks like quiet quitting. It looks like I'm here, but I'm not really here. I'm here, but I'm not really engaged. I'm not really responsive. I'm almost numb because that's actually how I've got to function in order to make this relationship tick along. Usually this doesn't sort of happen until somebody's poured some energy or poured some fight into making the relationship work.
The burnt out pursuer has often made countless attempts to connect. They feel ignored. Dr. Cassie says one of the first things she looks at is how those bids for connection are being made.
I think where it gets stuck is when those bids are misunderstood, or instead of saying, hey, I really miss you and I don't feel like a priority, it might come across as a little bit of a criticism or a critique. It might come across as complaining about how the dishes are not stacked properly or who didn't wipe out the bathroom. But underneath that complaint about those everyday things can be a message of, hey, do I really matter? Are you really there for me?
You can see how it plays out. Resentments build and what you really need from your partner gets lost in the conflict. But to be clear, asking your partner to stack the dishwasher properly is totally valid. The problem is when they don't understand what's really behind the request. Look after me, care for our family, do your bit, match my energy. Dr. Cassie says there are stages in a couple's life when a partner may be more vulnerable to checking out.
It can be life transitions around work and career, even moving into retirement. Even perimenopause is a really key one as well, because the hormonal aspect around I'm kind of burnt out, I can't carry all the things I once carried. But the one I invariably tend to see is starting a family.
Sure.
That seems to be the most sort of standout one. So I think those are really big times that there is a transition in terms of the change in the nature of the relationship, and perhaps requiring someone to step up more. We're requiring more of them. And if they aren't able to, then that can really be profoundly disheartening.
I was looking after myself, my baby, and now also looking after the person who was meant to be looking after me.
Ladies, meet Vera. She's 47 and lives in Sydney with her partner and their 5-year-old daughter. After a harrowing birth, Vera struggled to cope with the intensity of looking after a new baby while her body recovered, and she felt like her partner just did not have it in him to step up.
I feel he meant to support me. He was very loving, but it was hard for him to actually provide the support I needed, which was to look after us. He had to be told everything that I needed him to do, everything from housework to cooking to anything that I needed support with, I had to ask for it. And he would willingly do it, but there was no initiative. I don't think he has insight into how little he was actually doing. He would just be on his phone or nap during the day or when stuff needed to happen. And then he'd give me flowers. And then I'd feel like shit.
So hang on, he's napping during the day, you're working and parenting and doing everything. He has a nap and then he goes and buys you flowers?
Not on the same day. It would be some other occasion.
Okay.
Just when I've had like a week or two of feeling, can do something. And then he would come home with flowers and I think, that's lovely, but can you also buy the fucking groceries?
Yeah. Tell me how your finances played a role in your relationship.
He became unemployed shortly before our daughter was born, and thankfully I'm in a well-paid profession, reasonably, and was able to keep us afloat. But I always have to be the one who looks after the budget and who organizes everything in terms of everything from the groceries to the bills and everything, because he just doesn't even look at the accounts.
Right. I guess when I ask about money and how it affects you, how does that affect your feelings towards him?
Frustration and resentment. And then having to look after everything means I cannot feel attracted to him.
But 10 years ago when they first met, Vera was very attracted to him. She was drawn to his sense of adventure.
We loved diving, both big divers, bushwalking, camping, and the odd fetish party.
The odd fetish party, did you say?
Yes.
Tell me more about that.
Well, it was great when I saw his Tinder profile and saw that he liked a particular club that used to exist in the city. And I thought, well, this is somebody who is going to be comfortable with my weirdness. I wish I wanted him again.
Right.
Because it'd be hot. He's great.
He's great at sex.
He's great at sex.
Okay, my mind is blown. I was not expecting you to say that. I was expecting you to say he was shit at it.
No, he's great. What? We're actually really compatible.
Oh, my God.
Wish I could have the hots for him again.
But Vera no longer sees her partner as the sexy, capable, adventurous person she fell in love with. There's a parallel with Elodie's story here. Elodie's partner's dad died and it put a huge amount of stress on the partner dynamic. Well, a few years ago, Vera's dad got really sick during COVID lockdowns. He was overseas, the borders were closed, and she couldn't get to him. It was an excruciating time.
He died after 3 months in an hospital, and I was unable to travel to be with my family. And I just had to go back to work after a few days and carry on.
Vera had a toddler, she was steering the ship at home and was the sole breadwinner for the family. She couldn't fall because if she did, there was no one to catch her.
I think maybe it made me less able to accommodate him. I was less kind possibly to him because I was going through grief and being very isolated in it. It was just a very isolating time.
Yeah.
And I think in a way that also hampered my attempts at trying to connect and revive the relationship. I was putting one foot in front of the other and going to work and putting food on the table and caring for our child and doing all those things. But I just felt really empty inside and felt like I just didn't have the energy to try and revive something.
Vera, before you checked out, it sounds like you made many bids for connection. Is that right?
So I did organise a number of times for us to go out and do stuff, but I felt in time, I think I just ran out of energy to try and do it because I realised I'm the only person who's doing it, who's organising anything. I think I just felt sad in that, what's the point?
Do you think about the kind of relationship that you're modelling to your young daughter?
Yes.
Yeah, tell me about that.
I grew up in a household with unhappily married parents.
Mm.
I feel I'm doing my child a great disservice that this is what she's seeing. She sees my frustration and she also even says, Mama, why does Daddy sit on the couch on his phone and you're doing all the chores? Yes, why indeed?
We want to be able to show and model our kids what a loving, intimate relationship looks like.
This is clinical psychologist Dr. Cassie Shields again. She says staying together for the kids can often be counterproductive if you're modelling an unhealthy dynamic.
You know, then how does that impact what they then think or expect, maybe what they believe they deserve in terms of an intimate relationship when, you know, they then start dating?
Then there's the F word that makes it harder to leave a relationship that's not working, finances.
I think finances can be a really big thing. Divorce and separation is a freaking expensive exercise.
Yeah.
Yeah. Culturally, financially, faith can all be big things to leave.
Looking at your own relationship, Dr. Cassie says it's helpful to think about the three pillars of secure attachment that healthy relationships have. The first one is being accessible to your partner.
Accessibility being, I can reach to you and I know that you're going to be there for me. It reminds me of back when I got some really bad news around a pregnancy. And the very first thing I wanted to do was to call my husband at the time. And I knew that he would pick up the phone. I knew that he would respond. I knew that even if he couldn't pick up the phone immediately, he would ring back as soon as he could. If he had quite quit the relationship, he probably would ignore the phone call or like wouldn't get back to me at all. It just means that you're not really kind of there.
The second pillar of secure attachment is responsiveness.
If I have a responsive partner, I might reach out to them to put my hand on their lap or to put my arm around them. And a responsiveness is that they might reach back. They're going to hold my hand or pull me in closer. Like that's really responsiveness. So imagining that I am the partner that has quiet quit, maybe I recoil if somebody reaches to hold my hand or put their arm around me.
The last pillar is emotional engagement.
So that's kind of like at a deeper level. Like it's like when I share what I'm feeling and how I'm feeling, like my heartbreak when I got bad news around the pregnancy scan, when I share that emotion, my feelings are going to matter to you. You're going to be moved to hear what I'm feeling. That's the emotional engagement. I'm not just accessible. I'm not just present physically. I'm emotionally engaged. What you're saying, I feel it. It matters to me. If you're quiet, quit. If you're burnt out, it's just numb.
In relationships where someone has quietly quit, those pillars of connection, accessibility, responsiveness, and emotional engagement have dissolved like a pillar of salt in a rising sea. If you can say to your partner what you really want, like, I need you to take more initiative at home, or please actually have a crack at being alive and interesting, and you believe that they can step up, trusting that their heart is genuinely in it, Dr. Cassie reckons things can change. But in my experience, it's also powerful to take your energy elsewhere, because staying in a relationship you've checked out of costs you something too.
If you're quiet quitting your relationship, then you're missing out on a whole part of connection and love and attachment and intimacy that I think we all need as humans, you know? And it also means that our partners aren't getting an opportunity to really be loved as well. Like, we're not getting fully loved and they're not getting fully loved. And that's kind of shit. It's, you're not getting the fulfillment in your relationship that I think we all deserve.
I still love the person that I knew.
This is Elodie again, our mother of two who is still grieving the relationship of the past, even though she's been checked out for the better part of 5 years.
I cannot love the person he is at the moment because I cannot love someone who hurts me, even if it's not, you know, willingly, but when his behavior is so hurtful. But yeah, I think that understanding that at some stage there is, I think, you cannot change them.
You can't change them.
I cannot.
Yeah.
I mean, I know he needs support. I know he needs help. I know he needs to really, you know, just deal with his grief and all of this. Mm-hmm. And nothing will change if he doesn't do this. But I cannot force him to do that. It doesn't work like this.
Yeah.
And so basically at that stage, the only thing I can do is protect myself and protect the kids.
Earlier in the year, Elodie told her partner that she wanted to separate.
He didn't say anything about this for a few weeks. And then we had a chat where he made very clear that he would make things difficult if I left.
Oh, what do you mean?
Basically, it was, if you leave, well, don't expect things to go gently. I wasn't expecting this because I still believe that all the years we had before this would be enough to remember how important our relationship was.
What is keeping you in the marriage for now?
Nothing, apart from the fact that I don't have the mental space at the moment to deal with things going really ugly. So that's why I'm staying until I have enough of a bit of money on the side to do what I need to do. Even a year ago, if there had been progress on his side, I would have jumped back into the relationship in a heartbeat. Now, I might consider in a few years after him doing a lot of work on how to manage his emotions, maybe. Mm. But right now, no. I'm out.
I have given up on the relationship as it once was. I'm now trying to make the best of what it seems to be a friendship now.
This is Vera again, our super mum in Sydney. Vera, like Elodie, has the family finances on her mind. Her partner now works full-time, but she earns more than him. If she leaves, she knows she'll be the primary parent for their daughter, she'll have to find a new place, and she suspects she'll probably have to financially support him too.
I feel financially trapped to a degree. I know that if it was a desperate situation, I could leave and we would still have a roof over our heads. We would just have to move many suburbs away and it would be hard. And I also would not be able to get on a plane to see my mum. Single parenthood and being able to have an unwell parent overseas, they're just not financially compatible.
Hmm. Do you think your family not living in Australia contributes to your situation?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because then at least I could have somewhere to go temporarily, yeah, you know, while I get myself on my feet.
Totally. Yeah. I think about that all the time. My mum would put me up. She lives in Melbourne, so I'd have to move, but it would be fine. And I always have that as in my pocket. So that must be so impossible to face down something where you don't have that backup.
Mm.
Vera might not be in love with her partner anymore, but she does care about him. And she's worried about what would happen if she left him.
I think my biggest fear with the thought of us separating is that he'll take his own life because it'd be too hard and then my child won't have a father. I think that's my biggest fear.
Oh, can I just say this is a lot for you? You poor thing.
It's a lonely place.
Do you miss being in love?
Very much. Very much. Makes me very sad to think, well, I'll never feel that way again. Don't tell me that. I want to be in love again and have hot sex again.
Okay, here's a big question. Where do you think you'll be in 5 years' time?
I'm hoping to be happily co-parenting from separate homes. Hopefully, maybe opposite ends of the same neighbourhood if we could, so our daughter will still have that. There's a lot of love there. I just wish I could reciprocate that, the same kind of love that he has for me. I feel like I just can't do it anymore, and I think we're years past that now.
There's a bit of cruelty in the term quietly quitting, because aren't the women quitting because the husband has already quit himself? I feel like I know so many women who would stay if he just did the bare minimum. The relationships I've left, they would rather be on their phones than make an effort. They would rather the marriage fizzle to a dreary cohabiting impasse than actually do any work. Taking the next step past quietly quitting requires an energy that a lot of women might not have. Between ailing parents and demanding children, the momentum required to break the stagnant status quo is just another big ask that you might not be ready to take on. And it's worth understanding that at the end of every breakup, especially the ones where children exist, the division of assets and parenting time generally leaves both parties feeling worse off. This is because, generally, they are worse off. That's just the reality of splitting up. But they do gain something, and it's not happiness. Not immediately. They gain independence, they gain freedom, and they have one less person to take care of, which can feel great. And you know what else they gain? The opportunity to experience happiness again. This podcast was produced on the lands of the Gadigal, Muwinina and Dharawal people. Ladies, We Need to Talk is mixed by Anne-Marie de Bettencourt. It's produced by Elsa Silberstein and Sarah Mashman. Our supervising producer is Emma Morris and our executive producer is Tamar Kranswick. This series was created by Claudine Ryan.